They took two out of three, I think, from the maybe they took all three, but anyway, they had a good weekend in Seattle, and they're back in town tonight, but they won't be playing in the Trop again until tomorrow night. So, once again, you have us for the full 2 hours tonight. And got a big show lined up for you. Of course, it's Monday, so we're going to have a visit, our regular visit with Abe Katzman, and he's got a great new article out. He'll be calling us directly from Jerusalem here shortly, and it's an article that goes right to the heart of the president not having a strategy, which he admitted today, or at least he admitted that there we don't yet have a complete strategy when it comes to dealing with our foes in the Middle East, so to speak. And in particular, of course, we're talking about the Islamic State, more commonly known as ISIS. So it's a great article. We'll be going over that with Abe, as well as some other stuff in the news about Israel. We might even, if we have time, talk about the elections in Turkey that just happened. And by the way, the Turkish elections didn't go quite as good as Prime Minister Erdogan wanted to. And he, of course, was taking the country farther and farther towards fundamental Islam. And he got a pretty sound rebuke from all the different political spectrums in Turkey. So it was a pretty extraordinary thing that happened there. And let's see. This is breaking news. Just got this from Carl Jackson. Our army website has been hacked, and ISIS, the Islamic State, claims credit. Well, I don't doubt it.
We got hacked?
the army did, anyway. Of course, this is after the Office of Personnel Management got hacked by the Chinese. And so, you know, there's a lot of hacking going on out there, and it's to the detriment of us and our citizens here in the United States. But the incompetence and the overcomplication of this administration is mind-boggling and counterproductive. You know, when things get bad and things get rough, you always go back to the basics. You just go back to the basics, and if you practice the basics, you'll win the game every time. In football, they call it trench warfare. In baseball, they call it good pitching. But you just go back to the basics, and this president, of course, he's too nuanced, you know, to be, you know, going to the basics. Why, he's got to have this grand plan, which isn't really a plan at all, which is why they called it leading from behind. No complete strategy. Well, let's go back to the basics, President. Mr. President, for one, you can start by, instead of trampling on American values around the world, you could trumpet American values around the world. Instead of dismantling our military, you should build it up, which would give your red lines a little bit of credibility, which they have none of right now. You know, we'll, as I said, we'll be talking about that a little bit more with Abe Katzman here in the next segment of the show. We're also going to be talking about how Orange, have you heard of the new show? I think it's a TV show called Orange is the New Black or something like
Netflix
that.
Netflix original, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking about how Orange is now the new blacklist.
Really?
When it comes to Israel, anyway. As I said, we'll be taking that up with Abe a little bit later on. And then later on in the show, too, I'm going to talk a little bit about this strategy of Hillary Clinton's to accuse Republicans of course, wanting to keep people from voting and having overly restrictive voting laws. And she's got an ally in that fight. His name is George Soros. I call him Dino Soros. And, of course, Dino Soros has the deep, deep pockets. That's the bad news. There may be some good news in this, though, in the sense that the amount of money that George Soros is at least initially pledging to spend on this effort of Hillary's is, as one of my cousins used to say, chicken feed. Of course, the guy's a multi-billionaire, and he's talking about only ponying up $5 million to help in this cause to fund a super PAC to help Hillary in her cause. I think that says a lot about his confidence in Hillary, and it ain't much. It says a lot, which ain't much.
It's a wink.
Get it?
Yeah.
You know, so we'll talk about that a little bit more later on in the show. But once again, I want to remind you folks that 2 weeks from today, we're going to be doing a live remote broadcast down the street here from us at Cafe Positano, only the finest Italian restaurant in all of Central Florida, owned and operated by two fine Italian brothers, Pasquale and Roberto Barba. And they got a great operation over there. We're going to have a lot of fun. And hopefully it'll be a day kind of like today, you know, where there might be little clouds to maybe knock the little heat down a little bit.
A little wind here and there.
Yeah, but no real rain, you know, because we want to do a whole lot outside. And Ken Vihek is bringing over the Shriners, the local Shriners, and they're bringing all their gadgets and toys and animals and things, clowns. And by the way, we got a story on clowns later on, too. So.
You know, I don't care for clowns.
Well, then you may not want to go to where we're going to be talking about.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
So 2 weeks from today, that's at Cafe Positano. We'll be doing a live remote broadcast. And then, of course, we're going to be sticking around and having some good food and entertainment after that. But everybody is invited. And, of course, there's no cover charge or anything like that. Of course, you see me and you'll get a 20% off coupon, or one of us guys and gals, you'll get a 20% off coupon to your drinks and meals there. And if you are a member of the American Adversaries Army, and even if you join just the day before, you will be eligible for a free My Liberty Threads T-shirt with our cool new logo on it. So, and by the way, this is a logo that you could have worn to that bike fest hosted by Jody Ernst in Idaho over the weekend.
Nice.
Where about a half a dozen, six or seven of the Republican candidates showed up. And by the way, yes, two of them did ride in on scooters. Rick Perry rode in on a scooter, and I believe Scott Walker rode in on a scooter with Jody Ernst.
Really?
Yes, the woman new senator from Idaho, sitting atop her own big old hog there. And by the way, she offered, and I thought this was in a way, I don't know if condescending is the right word, but she offered to give Marco Rubio a ride on the back of her scooter. Now, wouldn't that have been a great photograph, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. They would have thrown all the Hispanic vote out the window. I'll tell you that right now. All right.
She was playing some mat work there, you know. That.
Yeah, but, you know, a woman offering a man a ride on the back of a motorcycle. I don't think we've gone that far
yet.
We
know what that subtly implies, right? There's a mood for that position.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, he politely declined. So, 2 weeks from today, Cafe Positano, if you would like to make a reservation, they are taking them, of course, already. And the number at Cafe Positano is 407-774-8080. That's 407-774-8080. You don't have to make a reservation that evening. Just show up anytime you like. And I'm sure we'll be around there until dark anyway. And but if you would like to make a reservation, make sure you have a table. And then go ahead and do so. And by the way, this is a great time to make a reservation for that graduation party. I guess most of them are over now, but you'll have college graduations coming up here the summer after the summer session. And it's always a great place to go to take that special someone or take your whole family. They have casual dining, a full bar, and, of course, fine dining. Entertainment on, Thursday night, I think, is ladies' night. They have entertainment Friday and Saturday as well. So it's a great place to be if you like Italian food and you haven't tried it yet. You need to scoot on down there or at least come on down on the 22nd and join us. All right, as I said, when we come back, we'll be talking with Abe Katzman. He's got a great new article that came out in the American Thinker over the weekend, as a matter of fact, on the 71st anniversary of D-Day. And it was quite appropriate in a way. But we'll take that up with Abe Katzman in the next segment of the show. Okay, once again, you are listening to the American Adversaries as we come to you live on AM 660, The Answer. And we'll be with you on The Answer all the way until 7 o'clock. Oh, my, don't go away.
Come to you. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries, and you don't need to change the channel. No, it's not Star Trek.
That was definitely William Shatner, though.
It definitely was.
Good old Bill.
You'll see where I'm going with this here in just a minute. That is Lucas Paris. He does have the Periscope up and running. I am Christopher Hart, and you can find us on YouTube. Our channel is American Adversaries TV on YouTube.
Hart one's up.
That's right. And we're waiting for Abe Katz to check in with us here any minute. He's got a great new article out, though. It's called Forfeiting America's Military Leverage. It came out in the American Thinker over the weekend. You can find Abe's work at abekatzman.com and, of course, at the American Thinker website as well. But I see we got Abe on the line right now, so instead of me telling you about the article, we'll talk about it with Abe himself. Abe, thanks again for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Of course, it's always a pleasure and very educational as well. Real quickly, how's the weather in Jerusalem tonight?
We've got a heat wave. Unpleasant. Ah. It was up in the high 90s today.
We've been having a little bit of a heat wave here, too. But
we can empathize, yeah.
Yeah, but the thunderstorms have been kind of coming in, at least to cool things off a little bit. By the way, that's Lucas Paris, who puts us up on his Periscope that you heard there, Abe. And
hello, Mr. Katzman.
he's in the studio with me tonight.
Excellent.
Okay. By the way, did before we get into your article and the meat of things here, did you see in Iowa how Jody Ernst had that little sort of bike fest get together out there for the Republican candidates?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of footage of that. Very impressive. I like, I like the motorcycles.
Yeah, I thought you might, since you told us a few weeks ago that you ride a scooter yourself. Well, a motorcycle.
Yep.
Yeah. So you'd have fit right in, huh?
Yeah. Maybe since everyone else is declaring for president, maybe I should think about it.
Well, you got some supporters right here, I'll tell you that. That's a fact. And I tell you, you keep pumping out great articles like this, and you'd have a lot of other supporters too, Abe. Forfeiting America's Military Leverage. As we were coming back from the break there, I played a little bit of the old Star Trek original series TV theme song there. And the reason I played that is because, you know, Kirk was always being accused of being sort of carrying out this cowboy diplomacy, I think Spock used to call it. And but actually carried, you know, practiced with a certain amount of expertise, it's quite effective. You call it gunboat diplomacy in your article, but it's basically, if you will, sort of talk softly but carry a big stick, is it not?
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, they used to call it gunboat diplomacy back in the days when Britain was a great naval power, and they would park a gunboat in the harbor of whatever weak power they needed some concessions from, and the gunboat could be a very persuasive vehicle.
Indeed, it could. As a matter of fact, on Memorial Day weekend that Sunday, I read some passages from a book written by Glenn Beck called Miracles and Massacres. And he talked about the situation with the Barbary pirates, the Muslims who were attacking the U.S. vessels as well as others in the Mediterranean Sea there in the late 1700s, early 1800s, how it vexed Thomas Jefferson. How he would send over, you know, a small troop or one ship to try to solve the problem. Didn't work. And then I think the first instance of the United States using gunboat diplomacy was Madison. He built up a naval armada. He sent it over there along with a personal message for, I believe they called him the Pasha, who was the leader there in Tripoli. And he said, here's what's going to happen. You're either going to get your mind right and quit attacking us. You will not get any stipend from us. You will release our hostages, or we're going to level your city and kill all of you in the process. Which is it going to be? And with that armada parked out there off the coast of Tripoli, it was a believable threat, Abe.
It would be nice if we had the equivalent today. Even if it wasn't, what I talk about here isn't so much using actual gunboat diplomacy, but the problem is that we've gone in the opposite direction. We've now got a policy that is as close to the opposite of gunboat diplomacy as we can possibly have when it comes to dealing with Iran. That we have you know, here the U.S. has, you know, more defense spending than the next seven countries combined. It's got tremendous advantages in terms of naval forces, military aircraft, cruise missiles, but nobody thinks that the U.S. is going to use it, especially the Iranians. And if the U.S. isn't rattling its saber a little bit, then what's the use of all that military power?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the threat has to have credibility, so to speak. You know, Barack Obama drew these red lines and never stood behind them, so he proved to the world that, you know, his threats were empty. And what you're saying is the threat has to be believable for this to work.
Yeah, the threat has to be believable, and it really hasn't been. And it, not that it was before, but last week Obama went on Israeli TV and said that a military solution won't fix the Iranian nuclear problem, even if the U.S. participates. He said it would only slow down the nuclear program, but it won't eliminate it. So if he's going on television and saying, in essence, that there's no point to the U.S. To U.S. involvement in an attack on Iran, he's basically taking the military option off the table. And with the military option off the table, well, there's no reason that Iran should make any concessions. They can dictate the terms of this agreement.
And as you point out in the article, that's the way the negotiations have been going on. They basically make the demands, and the United States and the other parties acquiesce.
Yeah, that's what's been happening. Oh, and also we've been paying them for that privilege. We've trying to, I guess, use no stick and all carrot. We've so far released something in the area of $11 billion in cash to Iran, and they're offering what they call a signing bonus of tens of billions of dollars of additional assets for Iran if they come to any kind of agreement. And that has nothing, regardless of what Iran does with the money, even if they use it as they have been for supporting terror, for supporting Hezbollah and Hamas, or even if they continue to hold, you know, they've been holding Americans prisoner.
Yes.
Including a Washington Post correspondent.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned him by name in your article. And it is ridiculous what's going on over there. These are hostages being held. They are not. They should be a part of the negotiations, as should be their interfering with Israel via Hamas and Hezbollah. I mean, all of this should be on the table, but it's not. And why should it be? Because the Iranians know that this president is there for the taking, that he's a soft touch. And but Abe, I'm up against the break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this. And as you say, it's detrimental effect in the region as a whole, because friends and foes, as you say in the article, are watching. And I want to thank you folks for listening. Once again, Abe Katzman article, you can find it at his website, abekatzman.com, or on American Thinker, because that's where it was published over the weekend. Okay, stick with us. We'll be right back.
Keep me moving.
AM660.
Yes, this is me, Brian Blair, the killer bee, and I'm tired of those sticky liberal lies. That's why I tune in to the American Adversaries, where you get nothing but the truth. So don't get stung. Listen to AM 660, The Answer.
That's right. We are coming to you live from the Hive. I am Christopher Hart, and I am in the studio today along with Lucas Paris, who has us up on the Periscope, and you can see us on our channel on YouTube.
Hart2's up.
There you go, American Adversaries TV. You can give us a call, too, if you'd like, 407-774-8255. We have our man, Abe Katzman. He's a part of course, the American Adversaries Army Task Force, where it is our task to bring the best and the brightest to you each and every day. And, of course, Abe fits that category. Abe, I love the first line in your article. You say, international diplomacy, it is said, is the art of letting the other party have your way. It would seem like the Iranians are practicing that to a T, man. They got it down, don't they? At least with
this
guy.
Yeah, they seem to have it.
Well,
they've been doing great, getting concession after concession out of the U.S., and it doesn't look like they've budged.
No, not at all. How about that? That I wasn't aware that we were going to give them a big payday just for signing. Is that right out of the Clinton diplomacy playbook? You know, big cash, big cash transfer here. You get what you want, right?
And maybe we'll throw in a couple of Bill's speeches. Those are worth a couple of million dollars.
Yeah, he can go to Tehran and tear it up, right? I also love your last sentence, though, is probably the one that sums it all up. You say, from Riyadh to Taipei to Jerusalem to Moscow to Beijing to Pyongyang, the world is paying close attention. As much as these nuclear negotiations are about Iran, they are even more about America. And really, that does sum it all up. But in that is not only the bad news, but the good news. Isn't it also, Abe, sort of? In other words, we could change this with the new administration?
We could, although there's an awful lot of damage that can be done over the next 18 months. But you're right. Hoping that we end up with an administration that goes back to a more conventional, more forceful U.S. foreign policy, it shouldn't be too much to expect that things will turn around and that the U.S. will regain the kind of respect that it had back when it was a serious military threat, or when there was serious military threat behind its foreign policy demands. I just want to add that, you know, there's a real change that's gone on here, because we're talking about a foreign policy which for years, for a century maybe, was based on the idea of America being willing to put its military behind its vital interests.
Right.
And keeping a nuclear weapon out of the hand of Iran is as vital an interest as there is. And if the U.S. won't consider military protection of that interest, then what interest will we back? And that's one of the reasons that, you know, I said that they're noticing this in Moscow and Beijing and Pyongyang, and also our allies are noticing it.
Oh, yeah, and they're not liking what they're seeing, not our allies anyway. The other guys, of course, are loving it. And this reminds me of what Barack Obama said on the 2nd of this month. He was talking, and I don't think this was, maybe it was the speech that he gave on Israeli TV. You tell me if it was. But he made some comments about Prime Minister Netanyahu. He said, well, first of all, the Prime Minister has the security of Israel first and foremost in his mind. But then he went on to say the Prime Minister sees his notion of being able to make peace in the Middle East, that is Barack's notion, is naive. He is, the Prime Minister is predisposed to see the world, to see the worst in the Palestinians. He says that this vision may seem wise in the short term, but it's unwise over the long term. In fact, the president is the one who really is naive. I mean, if the Prime Minister sees him and his policies as naive, he's correct.
Yeah, I think so. I believe that was in the Israeli TV interview.
Okay.
And at the same time, he said that he kind of addressing the people of Israel, he said, I understand your concerns and understand your fears. And I think that that got kind of a laugh out of most of the Israeli audience, because there's just a tremendous lack of trust. Lack of faith in President Obama's ability to understand what the security situation is here. And like you say, if anyone's being naive, it's him, both especially with Iran.
Oh, absolutely. And the best we can hope for out of these negotiations is that they keep going on until this guy's out of office. I mean, that one, unfortunately, probably would be the best outcome. Do you think, Abe?
Well, it may be, if they don't get a deal together, it may be that Congress might step up sanctions again. I think that would be something that would be of great value to this whole process, because that is really the one non-military thing that can slow Iran down and maybe bring Iran to the table again and maybe make them actually make some meaningful concessions.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the negotiations themselves, the latest I've seen in the media here in the United States is that they're kind of stalled again. Now they're talking about extending the deadline again. This has nothing to do with Kerry's broken leg. Has everything to do with the inspections. Where, what, when, why, and how will the inspections go forward? And, of course, the Iranians don't want any inspections at all, so they want to limit them as much as possible. Do you know any more than that?
No, that's what's been happening. They are refusing. They're basically refusing even to come clean about what they've been doing over the past years. Not only about what they will be doing in future years.
Yeah.
And they are. Remember, there's always the possibility that they're just trying to run out the clock. That they're continually making progress in their nuclear program, and they're just trying to drag this out until one day they announce that they're nuclear.
Yeah, that would definitely be a bad outcome as well. And, of course, another bad outcome would be for them to agree to a deal. We pay them off, we lift the sanctions, and then they don't hold to the deal. And then, of course, what's Barack Obama going to do about it then? There will be no snapback. There will be no retribution for Iran, and they'll be free to do what they want, in essence.
Yeah, I'm not sure what how this snapback is really supposed to work. It sounds good; it's a nice term, but in the real world, I don't think it means very much.
No, it doesn't. And as a matter of fact, I think that's one of the impetuses that drove George W. Bush to invade Iraq in 2003, is because there was a strong push around the world to lift the sanctions against Iraq. Was there not at that time?
Yeah, the sanctions were crumbling, as I recall.
Yeah, that, I believe that's the word that was being used in the media, crumbling. Let's talk about a couple of other things while I still have you, Abe. I know it's late at night over there. I saw an article in the Today's local paper. I think it was just a very small article saying that Prime Minister Netanyahu had given a speech basically saying, where's the world, because we're now getting more missile strikes from Gaza, where's the world paying attention to this? Are there more missile strikes now coming from Gaza, and how intense are they, if they are?
Yeah, in the last week, there have been probably half a dozen. They haven't, fortunately, haven't done any damage yet, but still, they're firing rockets from Gaza at Israel, and the world has been silent. Now, what's interesting about this is that it doesn't seem to be Hamas that's doing the firing. It's other groups. There are Salafist groups. I think there are some that are connected either with Islamic State or with Al-Qaeda, and also possibly Islamic Jihad. But Hamas, the story is that Hamas is actually cracking down and trying to stop the rocket attacks. I guess they only want rocket attacks when it's on their terms.
Well,
not when any of the other groups are able to do it.
Right, but it also demonstrates that they aren't really in control if these other groups can sort of do it at their own whim. So I would think Hamas would, more than anything else, just wants to be the top dog over there. And yeah, it's okay when they do it, but nobody else better do it, or they're going to get Hamas getting after them. It's interesting because in the face of that, and in the face of what drove the Israeli military to have to go into Gaza last year to clean it up, there's this boycott movement going around the world, and in particular in colleges. There was a story that we teased for the Soundbite news website where in the UK a student union has backed this boycott. Evidently, there's efforts here in the United States and colleges to do it. France has come out and condemned the boycott in the face of one of their telecommunications companies called Orange. I'm calling it, there's the TV show Orange is the New Black. Well, Orange is now the new blacklist, and Israel is the one who's gotten listed. How troubling is that to people in Israel, and how much is that being focused on in the media there?
The amount of focus has been picking up, and in fact, it's been noticed by the government. Prime Minister Netanyahu has spoken about it at cabinet meetings, and they're trying to come up with some kind of strategy to combat it. It's not an easy thing to do because it's something that raises its head in hundreds of places. The U.S. college campuses, from what I understand, are just awash with anti-Israel sentiment and this boycott movement. So I'm not sure what will come of it, but it is dangerous down the road that there's going to be this boycott that is really an attempt to choke off Israel's economy. And one thing that Israel has been doing, and I don't know if it's enough, is they've been pivoting to the Far East and to India, so that even if, let's say, the Europeans invoke some sorts of sanctions against Israel, India, China, some of the other countries would still be a good outlet for Israel's economy, to be Israel's trading partners.
Yeah, and this movement that has its own name, it's called Boycott, Divest, and Sanction, BDS, I guess. So, yeah, it seems to have a considerable amount of organization going on here. Do you think one of the reasons why they're going into the college campuses is to try to gin up some sort of protest atmosphere, sort of reminiscent of the 60s, if you will, against the Vietnam War?
Yeah, I think there is something like that. I think that campuses tend to be hotbeds of this type of thing. Of generally, you know, it's always something with a leftist slant. But there, I guess, there are a lot of students with a lot of time on their hands, and misguided as they may be, you know, they're not calling for boycotts of ISIS. They're not calling for boycotts of Syria. They're not calling for boycotts of any other country, just the one democratic country in the Middle East. That's who they're going after.
And only our biggest ally and, of course, our greatest friend that we could ever have does seem like short-sighted wisdom, if to use President Obama's terminology. One last subject
matter.
Well,
there's a feeling, there's a strong feeling here that it is actually thinly veiled anti-Semitism.
Oh.
Again, they're going after the one Jewish country in the world.
Yeah, it's not even very thinly veiled. I mean, it's right there. It is every bit that. In this day and age of political correctness, where we're supposed to be not offending people, you know, to do something like this and so selectively, it is quite offensive, in my opinion. And shouldn't be tolerated silently anyway. We need to be speaking out against this sort of nonsense and against our youth being used in this fashion as elaborate suckers, if you will, Abe.
Yeah, I think that's the right sentiment. I hope that we can figure out what to do to combat it.
Yeah. One last thing before I let you go. Israel, happy about what happened with the Turkish elections? Prime Minister Erdogan did not get the kind of support he was looking for?
Yeah, that was a bright spot in the news. You know, he's been increasingly fundamentalist Muslim and also increasingly authoritarian. He's been consolidating all kinds of powers into his presidency. So he's sort of turning it into an Islamic dictatorship. Well, this may have slowed him down, maybe even put a stop to his movement, to the authoritarian part of the movement. And Israel sees it as a very good sign. And remember, not so long ago, the Israeli military and the Turkish military had a very good relationship. And perhaps we could see the return of that kind of relationship.
Yeah, we can only hope. We can only hope, because that could be a key strategic ally in this battle against the Islamic State and fundamentalist Islam in general. Abe, once again, always very educational talking to you. It's a great article. I suggest all of our listeners check it out and read it. And it's, as always, well thought out and well expressed. You are the man.
Thank you so much.
All right. You take care over there. We'll pray for a break in the weather for you. Get some rainfall and some cooler temperatures over there.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Good night, Abe. And once again, thank you so much for being a part of the American Adversaries Army Task Force. You can do no better than Abe Katzman. We'll be right back.
We're the train. Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, and you in midair. Send in the clowns. Isn't it bliss?
Oh, it's bliss when the clowns come in. That's why they've made it a law. That's right, folks. I'll tell you what. In Argentina, they've made it a law that you must bring in the clowns. And you must send in the clowns. Where to? No, not into their legislature or into their presidential palace. Actually, into public hospitals. They passed a law last month in Argentina that requires hospitals to hire clowns to not only uplift children's spirits, I guess, and adults too, depending on the situation, but in particular, they're there to not only lift the spirits of children, but also to try to get some children who are shy and maybe afraid of doctors and nurses to open up a little bit and talk. So they have made it a law in Argentina that requires clowns be available to help treat child patients. All right. You know, hey, I'm all for it. You know, it's not a bad idea, but you'd think that maybe one of the nurses at the hospital could have a little get up, you know, and go off into the closet and put on a, you know, a mop, you know, for a wig and a little nose or something. Well, anyway,
I'll be honest with you, Chris. I don't care for clowns.
There's a lot of people who don't care for clowns.
I think I'll just avoid Argentinian hospitals.
I tell you, yeah, wasn't there one of those horror movies that was made around the clown or something like that? Anyway, in Argentina, it is now a law. You must bring in the clowns. And, of course, it's not a law here, but the clowns are running the show, it seems like. Certainly with this administration, you want to talk about clowns. As we talked with Abe, this president has no credibility, none whatsoever on the world stage. He's there as the other leaders see to be taken advantage of. And as Abe says, the art of diplomacy is to get the other party to do what you want. And in this case, it is more, this administration is more than accommodating. Okay, we're just about to wrap it up here for the first hour of the show. You know it is summertime. We're getting those summertime blues. You heard Abe talking about how they're having a heat wave over there. It's only a matter of time before we get a serious one here. That's part of summer in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And you are going to need that AC, and you are going to need that AC working right. And if you need a new AC, now is the time to get one because you can get it at half price. That's right. You can go to halfpriceradiodeals.com. Hold on a second. I'll get the exact location for you here. Or you can call Bill Files right here. He's the station manager. He will set you up with a half-price deal. Of course, they got half-price tuition. They got half-price AC. They got all kinds of half-price stuff. You can call Bill at 407-618-1760. That's Bill Files. He's the station manager here at 407-618-1760. And that's, of course, also amazingradiodeals.com. That's amazingradiodeals.com. Don't get stuck in the heat this summer because you don't have an AC that'll cool you down. And the best way to get one is half price. That's amazingradiodeals.com. And, of course, you can see all the schools they have there for half-price tuition and all the other great half-price deals as well. So do take advantage of that should you need a new AC or want to get that child out of public school into private school. Before we go on to the next hour, we just want to extend our condolences to the Siegel family. One of their daughters has passed away, a 17-year-old daughter. It's, of course, a tough thing anytime a child dies in a family like that. And we, of course, would wish condolences to any and everyone in this situation. But their daughter, Victoria Siegel, only 18 years old, was found unresponsive on Saturday afternoon and pronounced dead at the Health Central Hospital in Ocoee there. And it's a sad day. We don't have any other details. Evidently, the family will release them as they get them. I don't know if you folks remember, I think it was about a year ago, we actually had the Queen of Versailles on our show one afternoon. And, of course, that would be Jackie Siegel, and she's actually a bright woman. A lot of people, you know, see the TV show and just think she's some ditzy blonde or something, but actually she's a very bright woman. Has a college, she has a bachelor's degree in computer science. And I'm here to tell you, folks, I couldn't even make it through one class of computer programming.
I couldn't hack it. So
and you know, I always did pretty well on analytical portions of tests, but when it comes to that computer stuff, I mean, you know, of course, this was back when you had the punch cards and stuff. But I tell you what, I'd punch that stuff in, I'd type it in, it wouldn't work. I'd have one of my friends type it in, same thing, and it would go through without a, you know. So me and computers just never did see eye to eye. But once again, our condolences to the Siegel family. I'd also like to ask you to pray for Sunny, our California glow girl. Her brother has been taken to the hospital, airlifted to the hospital in Toledo. His name is Walter, and she, of course, is a part of our Sunday evening 3-hour classic tour every Sunday night. So please also pray not only for the Siegel family, but for Sunny and her brother Walter. We'll be right back after this short break. Please don't go away.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. 105.5 W280 CJ OVW. AM 660, The Answer.
Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. We're on a road.
All right, welcome back, folks. That's right. It's time for round two, as Lucas likes to put it. That's right, round two of the
Where's the bell?
American Adversaries, there it is.
All right. Round two.
Yeah, we need a more manly-sounding bell, though. Anyway, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You got us on AM 660. The Answer will be live right here on the airwaves and on AM660TheAnswer.com right up to straight up to 7 o'clock. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lucas Paris. He's got us up on the Periscope. That's him. And, of course, you can see us at our channel on YouTube. That's American Adversaries TV on YouTube. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge. We're in good hands with him. 407-774-8255 is the number as we once again come to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. And for the very best and complete dentistry, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. He'll fix you right up. And don't forget to ask him about his great book, Mercury Free. Okay, we got a whole nother hour to go here. So once again, chime in if you like. I just want to kind of review a little bit because the president admitted today that we don't have a quote-unquote complete strategy to fight the Islamic State, commonly known as ISIS, who has now expanded all across the Middle East. Their reach is getting farther and farther away from Iraq and Syria, which, of course, is where the main bulk of the fighting is going on. But their influence and their reach keeps expanding. I think it's into some like 30 countries now. Across Africa and Middle East and into Asia. And, of course, the problem is only growing while our president dilly-dallies around trying to figure out what strategy he's going to come up with, what complete strategy. And what he meant by that was it wouldn't be complete, of course, until we have Iraqi participation. And, of course, he sets forth basically things that aren't going to happen with the Iraqis. They're not going to be effective coalition partners because we have deserted them. We've basically undermined them. Anything that would have made them effective coalition partners went out the window when the troops left. So he has basically made it impossible for them to be an effective partner in this coalition, and yet he demands that they do be that so that then we would have a complete strategy. Well, obviously, he's set up a situation that he knows will never happen, so he can go along and continue to blame it, as he always does, on someone else. But as Abe pointed out, and by the way, if you didn't hear our first hour of the show, we interviewed Abe Katzman. He comes to us live from Jerusalem every Monday. He's got a great article that came out in the American Thinker this weekend called Forfeiting America's Military Leverage, that this administration basically has changed the way we carry out diplomacy around the world. I guess Jimmy Carter might have been close to this, but even Carter was of the mind that we needed a strong military. I mean, he went forward with the B-2 bomber. He wanted the neutron bomb. He took a lot of heat from a lot of liberals over the neutron bomb. I don't know if you folks remember what the neutron bomb was, but some buddies of mine wrote a sort of a head-banging song about it, a heavy metal song. Neutron bomb, everybody wants one. Neutron bomb, the Pentagon's gotten one. Neutron bombs, the people they die, but the buildings they stay. The idea of the neutron bomb was is it wouldn't have a very large explosive force, so it wouldn't be very destructive in that sense, but the neutron radiation would kill a lot of people.
End of all flesh.
Yeah. So, you know, Jimmy Carter had his moments, let's just say. This president doesn't. His moments that he has are all bad, all signs of weakness, always trampling on the greatness of America and American values, making excuses, making apologies, blaming other people, other things. Never standing up and being. Yeah, you know, I was told one time that a sign of maturity is when you quit blaming your problems on other people, in particular your parents, for instance. But, you know, it's when you finally decide to stand up and take responsibility for your own actions and your own decisions, that's a sign of maturity. We do not see that in this president. We've never seen that in this president. He is the most immature 47, 48, 50-year-old man well, actually, he's older than that now. What am I talking about? 57, 58-year-old man that has ever walked, you know, in the halls of the White House. And the answer for his strategy is in Abe's article, and that is to get back to what we used to call gunboat diplomacy. In other words, not necessarily, as Abe said, physically, you know, putting a military presence off the border of some state, but at least having a credible threat that you will do something like that, that you will take military action. Then people sit up and take notice and listen to you and will give you, shall we say, concessions that they will not otherwise give. The reason the president cannot get any concessions out of the Iranians is because he has no credibility. He has no, there is no umph to his threats. There is no credibility to his threats. Yes, we have the greatest military in the world, but they see that military as shrinking. And they know, by the admission of our own Secretary of Defense, that we can no longer fight two wars simultaneously. That is a shrunken military from the time that this president took office, a dramatically shrunken military. So if you want to have an effective strategy, if you want our opponents in the world to listen to you and take heed of what your threats are, your red lines, and if you want our allies to feel confident when you promise them things, the first thing you need to do is to turn this deteriorating military around into a rebuilding military. You want to talk about shovel-ready jobs? How about great technical-ready jobs? How about we put factories back to work that are sitting closed and empty right now? We put steel mills back to work producing high-quality steel for the hulls of ships and the skins of tanks and the tubes of cannons. We start doing that, and we start doing that in a serious way, and our friends and our foes around the world, as Abe rightfully says, they're watching. They will take notice. They will take notice. And the lesson is in what Madison did when he followed Jefferson. Jefferson, as brilliant as the man was, he couldn't bring himself to doing what it took to get the Barbary pirates to stop harassing us and demanding money from us. And so Madison comes along and he says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to build up our Navy. I'll send it over there and I'll give them the choice. I'll give them the choice of either signing a treaty and making peace with us and we'll leave them alone as long as they hold to the treaty, or we'll just blow them all to hell. Give them the choice. But it has to be a credible threat. and see when he had a bunch of ships pull up in right off Tripoli over there, and the Pasha could look out his little telescope there and see them, and see the cannon portholes, the holes in the side of the ships, where you had different cannons that could poke out of there and send, you know, shells and ordnance your way. It became believable all of a sudden. But when there was no military, when there was no real threat, well, the Pasha took hostages, made slaves out of our sailors, tortured them, the whole nine yards. The answer is simple. You get back to basics. If you want people to believe your threats, militarily speaking, you must have a military that will make them fear them, fear the threats. And when they see our military shrinking, when they hear our top military civilian officers say that we can no longer fight two wars at one time, here's what they're thinking. Okay, even if the United States does take military action against us, they could not sustain that military action because their military is now so deteriorated, mothballed, if you will. So all we got to do is ride out a few attacks, go to the UN and plead our case and cry and moan and talk about how we're being discriminated against and give them the liberal, you know, pitch, hook, line, and sinker. Of course, they'll eat it up at the UN. Next thing you know, we'll be getting treated like Israel, you know, where we're the bad guys. And that'll be the end of that. But that's the bad news. The good news is we can turn this around, just like Madison turned it around after Jefferson. It just takes the will to do it. Of course, with this president, we don't have that will. But with the Republicans, many of them in the field, I think we do have the will to do that sort of thing. But it needs to go farther than that. It needs to be the will in the nation to do this sort of thing. Now, I'm not saying that we have to go invade every country, but we might. And we better damn well be prepared to do it. Because if we're not, it's not going to be like World War II, where we can ramp up right away and take care of business. This is a different kind of problem here. We need to have the forces ready to go. We can't do it after the fact. It needs to be done before the fact, with the hope in mind that it will prevent that type of conflagration. Madison built up the Navy. He sent it over there. And guess what the Pasha did? Well, Tripoli is still standing. We did not level it because the Pasha got his mind right. He came to his senses. He signed the treaty, and he stuck to it. And the reason he stuck to it is because Madison stuck to his strategy of a strong military, peace through strength. He said, peace is preferable to war, but war is preferable to being enslaved or subjugated to any other force or power. So peace is preferable to war, Mr. Obama, but your type of peace is only going to bring us closer to war, not get us further away from it. So don't go far away from us, folks, because we'll be right back after this short break. We got a lot more to talk about. I'm going to talk about Hillary and Dino Soros and why there's some good news in that bad news. We'll be right back.
The bad man of World Championship Wrestling, and I'm here to tell you, listen to the American Adversaries. They may be some bad men, but they're great guys.
Love that guy.
Of course, that's our friend Mark Merrow. Mm-hmm. We are back, and we are the American Adversaries. 407-774-8255 is the number if you want to be a part of the show today. Real quickly, Madison, what Madison actually said, he said, and I quote, peace is preferable to war, but war is preferable to tribute. Tribute was the word I was missing in that last segment there. In other words, we will not pay tribute to any country. We would rather go to war with you. And he was believable. And that's the difference between him and this president. This president is not believable. But the good news is, if we're followed up with a good, strong, conservative voice who is bent on intent, I should say, on rebuilding our military, their threats will be far more credible in this world. And we don't always have to be there with our military force, but we do always have to have our military force. It's just good insurance. You know, you don't want to be caught without it. Speaking of being caught without it, Hillary Clinton doesn't want to be caught without the help that she can get from George Soros. Her attack, if you will, on Republicans basically is, to sum it up, trying to position herself within her own policy. Her attack on Republicans about these voting laws that have been strengthened, if you will, around the country, including here in the state of Florida. We're one of the culprits, so to speak, because we have shortened the time of early voting that we have since Rick Scott became governor, requiring photo IDs for voting. These sorts of things is what Hillary Clinton is striking out against. Of course, it's ironic that if you want to go to a Hillary Clinton event, if you are able to get in, you will have to show a photo ID. Yeah, so, you know, what?
Like, this is compulsory, people. Come on.
but what it does is it says something about where she is, which is basically she's in deep trouble. She's in deep, stinky stuff, and she knows it. And what this is this is an attempt basically just to pull the base together. She being basically the only credible threat on the Democratic side so far.
Right now.
Exactly. She shouldn't be having to do this, but she is because basically she doesn't have the same charisma as her husband or Barack Obama. So she needs to be very diligent and hardworking at building her base and trying to have her base be active enough that it'll create some sort of momentum that will carry through into the middle undecided people, the moderates, so to speak, as we call them. But in reality, it's a bad sign for her campaign that she has to be going to these lengths. But obviously, it's going to be a campaign theme. But the problem for her is the overwhelming majority of the American public thinks that photo IDs are a good idea. Mm-hmm. That most of these things, these voting restrictions, as she calls them, are good things.
We're in a very security-minded public these days.
Well, it's not only that, but you also want to think that the system is fair.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And even if there isn't a rash of voter fraud, as the liberals would you know, as they claim, you know, why do all these things? There's no real problem here. It doesn't matter if there's a real problem or not. What matters is if the people think there is a real problem or not, right? Because if they think there's a problem, it will discourage them from going to the polls.
People will feel better about doing something if they feel like they're secure in doing it.
And that it's fair and on the up and up.
That's true, too.
And if they're told they only get one vote, then nobody else should get more than one vote, too. Mm-hmm. And if they lose confidence in that system, they'll drop out of the system, you see? And, of course, this is what the Democrats exactly want.
You face it a little bit.
Well, yeah. See, with all their claims, what they really want is less conservatives going to the polls. And whatever it takes to get less of them to go to the polls, the better. And where George Soros comes into play in this is that he's already been ponying up millions of dollars to fight this in the courts. And by the way, he's been using a super PAC that's been using a lawyer who the lawyer also is, one of his clients is, guess who? Hillary Clinton.
Hillary, yeah.
That's right. And the guy's name is Mark Elias. Mark Elias specializes in voter protection issues. And he was put in contact with George Soros back in January of 2014. Since then, he's been handling these legal challenges around the country to these new voter laws. And George has promised to put up another $5 million in the fight. Of course, this is peanuts. This is chicken feed when it comes down to the kind of money that they will need to make a serious impact in this. Now, obviously, it's early in the game. But to me, I think that this says something about George Soros's lack of confidence in Mrs. Clinton. I don't think he wants to pony up or at least promise up a lot of money right now, because I think he knows that he'd be flushing it down the toilet, or he just might as well flush it down the toilet.
I think he's saving aside money for a better candidate later on down the road.
I do, too. I don't think
you both agree Hillary Clinton's very flashy enhancement talent.
Well, not only that, but what she has running against her is enhancement talent. Mm-hmm. And what Lucas means, that's a professional wrestling terminology. And, of course, our show likens politics to professional wrestling around here. And you do get this enhancement talent. For instance, Bernie Sanders is enhancement talent. Martin O'Malley is enhancement talent. Who's that other guy? Javits, I can't remember his name.
He's probably a jobber.
Yeah, and a jobber is a guy who comes in, basically he's enhancement talent just to be there to get beat up in professional wrestling. They never be, you know, they're never the champions, but they're always there, you know, wrestling week in, week out. And but these guys are there to make Hillary Clinton look more acceptable to the middle of the road people, the moderates. Unfortunately for her, the reality is she doesn't have her base in her pocket with her yet. She's a very weak candidate. The only thing Hillary Clinton has going for her, well, she has two things going for her, and basically it's affirmative action in both cases. Her last name, Clinton, were she Hillary Rodham, nobody'd give a hoot what she had to say, and the fact that she is a female. Were not for those two things, nobody would care about this woman, because she's just not a good candidate, and she's just not very smart. She's just not a smart woman. Just reference her press conference. What was it, a couple of months ago when, you know, the email thing came out? You know,
that little scandal.
And all these just ridiculously stupid excuses like, oh, I didn't know you could have two things. You know, you could have two email addresses, and don't worry about the security of our server because it had Secret Service protection, like a guard in the hallway is going to protect you against a hacker on the other side of the planet. I mean, this is just utter stupidity. This woman is a weak candidate. The only way the Republicans can lose against this woman is if they nominate basically somebody like Jeb Bush or, I hate to say it, Lindsey Graham, because the people will just, they will not go and vote.
It could be a battle of paper tigers, Chris.
Yeah, but even in Jeb Bush's case, I think even Jeb Bush would beat Hillary Clinton. I don't think there's anybody hardly on the Republican side that couldn't beat Hillary Clinton. She's that bad of a candidate. I mean, the Republicans, most of them, for the most part, are serious candidates. She's not. It's not even comparable. And to see the reluctance of a guy like George Soros, who has many billions of dollars, only willing to cough up a measly $5 million, says a lot to me.
Feathers in the hurricane.
All right. Speaking of saying a lot, I got a lot more to say, so stick around. We'll be back.
AM 660.
You gotta keep them separated.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks, where we separate fact from fiction and truth tellers from the liars. 407-774-8255 is our number. I am Christopher Hart. I got Lucas Paris in the studio with me.
Periscope is here.
He's got the Periscope here. That's right. It's up and running. And you can see the results on our channel on YouTube. That's American Adversaries TV on YouTube.
Nick, six parts up.
Six parts up. Let's see. What? Two more to go.
Two more to go. Yeah.
Nick LoCicero on the bridge, 407-774-8255. As we come to you live on AM 660, The Answer. And real quickly, a week from tomorrow, Carl Jackson and a fellow by the name of Wallace Brushweiler are going to be speaking at the Eastmont Civic Center. And I hope you folks will get on over there. It's tomorrow, a week from tomorrow. That's the 16th. The doors open at 6:30, so you can listen to us on the way over there. And the event starts at 7. It is free. Of course, Carl Jackson is a great colleague of ours. He was on our show last night. And by the way, if you didn't catch our show last night, you can go to our archive after tonight's show, of course, and you'll find it there at AmericanAdversariesRadio.com. We had a spirited conversation there last night about prohibition and other things. But once again, that's at our website. But Carl Jackson will be speaking and along with Wallace Brushweiler at the Eastmont Civic Center next week. That's Tuesday the 16th. Doors open at 6:30. It is free, and you'll want to get over there and see that. By the way, Wallace will be talking about how the UAE is now running Port Canaveral over there and how that might have some security concerns for us. And Carl Jackson will be talking about, I believe it's a black voter fatigue or Carl, if you're listening, if you'll text me exactly what you are going to be talking about next week, I'll tease it out here for you. In the meantime, I want to make I don't know if it's a correction, but we were under the impression that the file, the police report that was released having to do with Josh Duggar was released illegally. The city attorney of Springdale, Arkansas, is now saying that that was not accurate, that the report's release was legal. He released this statement saying, on May 20th, 2015, in full compliance with Arkansas law, the Springdale Police Department responded to a records request under the Arkansas Freedom of Information Act. He said further, the requested record was not sealed nor expunged, and at the time the report was filed, the person listed in the report was an adult, that, of course, being Josh Duggar. Any names of minors included in the report, as well as pronouns, meaning like he or she, were redacted from the report by the Springdale Police Department in compliance with Arkansas law prior to release. So evidently somebody got tipped off and requested by via a Freedom of Information Act law in Arkansas this report. And if this city attorney is correct, and we must assume that he is, then the report was released legally. Whether it should have been done ethically or why someone would want to do that, obviously they want to bring disfavor, disrespect, disreputability to the Duggar family and everything that they stand for. And make no mistake, in my mind, this is once again, if you will, a little chipping away of our Judeo-Christian heritage to try to bring disfavor upon these people because they suffered with the same problem that I'd bet you 8 or 9 out of 10 families in this country have suffered with it at some point or another. Kids, doing things they shouldn't have ought to been doing, and sometimes doing it without clothes on or something. I mean, to think that what this 14-year-old kid, was tantamount to some sort of rape or something like that, or fully grown man doing this sort of thing is absurd. And allegations that the Duggar parents should in some way face some sort of legal sanctions is also absurd. This is simply what it means to have children. All right. So the story goes on, and I hope the show comes back to television. Unfortunately, like I say, this is going to be a little bit tougher than, say, for instance, what the Duck Dynasty guys went through, because in this case, in the liberals' mind, a crime has been committed here. Well, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that. Obviously, the kid was misbehaving, but I don't know if it rises to the level of crime. It's all in the perspective. But nonetheless, the city attorney says that the report was released legally. Right next door in Texas over the weekend, there was a pool party going on, where I guess some unwanted guests showed up.
Oh.
And then the invited guests called the police. The unwanted guests were some teenagers both black and white. Maybe some Hispanics mixed in there, too. But when the police came, order was soon lost. There was a scrum, if you will, the police running in all different directions, tripping and falling and grabbing kids. And one of the cops even pulled a gun on a bunch of teenagers. You know, I'm a big proponent of respecting law officers in particular. I mean, they've got the toughest job of all. But come on. I mean, this was a situation that rapidly got out of control. And it was obvious that once it did get out of control, that the police officers didn't know really how to get it back in control. And not that I, of course, not having been there, would have known what the first thing to do myself. But it's obvious that the relationship between the police and the citizenry here in this country is heading for an all-time low. The distrust, the lack of respect, the impossibility of the job for the police. It's all there. I mean, when you give people a job that is virtually impossible to do, there's going to be no good way to do it. And not saying that in this particular case that this couldn't have been handled much better by the police, but I think underlying all of this is a breakdown in our social structure. And it's being fueled, it's being fed by the likes of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, Al Sharpton, Eric Holder. Now that he's gone, he's not so much part of the problem anymore, but he's certainly left a nasty situation in his wake. And the police departments around the country are basically under siege. And teenagers can be, you know, they say middle school is the worst of all the schools to teach in, because you don't have the old, the kids are between the young kids who look up to adults and older kids who are beginning to think like adults. And so you have this sort of mid-range, and these kids can really be a problem. But nonetheless, you don't go pulling guns on them. And you don't go tackling them and threatening them in that fashion. It just shows that they are in control, that you are not in control of the situation. And I don't have any prescription for the police department that they could have done anything better or done anything different, that it would have come in a different outcome, except that you have to be the adults in the room. And you can't be the adults in the room when you're literally chasing the kids around and tripping and falling all over yourself in the process. It begins to look like the Keystone Cops. And this is the last thing, police departments around the country need. And, of course, everything today, if there's any kind of a crowd, is going to be videotaped. And it's going to show up on YouTube or wherever. And maybe it'll be done via Periscope. And I'm not talking about our Periscope. I'm talking about Periscope, which is a real-time live video service that you can get the app. And so as you're videotaping it, you're not taping it, you're not recording it. It's going live into the Periscope world, and people can watch it real-time. But having said that, there's no easy solution to the place that we've come to today in terms of the relationship between the police departments around the country and the people that they are supposed to be there to protect. Because we have set up a situation. We talked about this last night with prohibition and laws that where we are demanding that our police force do things that they are incapable of doing. We are demanding that they go into our communities and rid our communities of drugs. Ain't going to happen. Sorry. Will not happen. Unless we give the police the power to come and go out of our homes, look and inspect us anytime, anywhere, any place. That's the only way that you will happen, that it will happen. But you know what? Even then, it wouldn't happen. Let's take, for instance, prisons. All right. Obviously, you can't have contraband in prisons, can you?
But it's still there.
It's still there. It sure enough is. Jim McDougal. I don't know if you folks remember Jim McDougal, but Jim McDougal was, he was part of the savings and loan that was part of the Whitewater scandal there in Arkansas. You know, the Clintons and all that stuff. Jim McDougal went to prison, died in prison of a cocaine overdose. Okay? Cocaine in prison is not an uncommon thing. And now you would think that with that control, that much of a controlled environment, where the guards can go into a cell at any time with no, you know, reasonable suspicion, just because they're a guard and the inmate lives there, they can go in, and yet the drugs still exist there. Guess what? They have sex in prison, too. Yeah, sure enough, they do. Most of it is homosexual sex, but guess what? They have heterosexual sex in prison, too. You want to know why? Because the prison guards can make some extra money if they're female or if they're males in a women's prison. These are the realities, folks. These are the realities. The police cannot do what we are asking them to do. That's why they end up looking like, for lack of a better word, fools and being made fools of. Because we have given them an impossible task. All right, when we come back, we'll continue the conversation, and we'll begin to wrap up tonight's show. Don't forget, tomorrow night, now we're going to have Colonel Danny McKnight on, and we'll be talking about the situation in the Middle East. We'll be talking about General Terry, who said that, oh, yeah, we've stopped ISIS. Yeah, we got it under control over there. Well, we'll see what the colonel has to say about that. Mike McBath is also going to be sitting in, so it's bound to be a lively show. Please don't go away. We'll be right back.
The pearls of rock and roll decadence.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks, where you got the pearls of talk show decadence. That would be me, Christopher Hart, Lucas Paris in the studio, and Nicholas Cicero on the bridge. All right, we got some good news, bad news stories that I'll close it out with here tonight. What should I start with? Bad news? Let's go
do
with
the bad news first. Yeah. That way we can end on a good note.
Yeah, I like that idea. Before we get to that, though, I just want to once again welcome Jerry Shepard of Jerry's Mercedes-Benz Service to the American Adversaries Army Task Force. Of course, Jerry was on our show last Thursday, and he'll be back again in the future, regular basis. And it's a great shop they have over there. If you have a Mercedes-Benz, you need to know Jerry Shepard. Jerry'sMB.com is their website. That's Jerry'sMB.com. Their dealership alternative service center. When I say dealership alternative, I mean by that you'll get the same quality service, even better service, at the best price. And they'll beat the dealership price hands down every time. They're located just off Alafaya Trail, just north of UCF, on a street called Econ Circle. But if you want to give them a call, you can do that at 407-366-6499. That's Jerry's Mercedes-Benz Service, 407-366-6499. Once again, want to give him a big thank you for being a part of our American Adversaries Army Task Force. By the way, you can also be a part of the American Adversaries Army. You don't have to be a sponsor, although if you'd like to come in that way, we'll take that too. But if you just would like to join the American Adversaries Army, all you have to do is go to our website, AmericanAdversariesArmy.com. Excuse me, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com to enlist in the Army. Just go to the recruiting office. You can either sign up right there online, or you can do it through the mail, the old snail mail way. Either way is fine with us. We'd just love to have you be a part of the Army. Don't forget, if you come out 2 weeks from today to Cafe Positano for our live remote broadcast and potty, we're going to have a big old wing ding over there, shindig, whatever you want to call it. Come on down. If you are a member of the Army, you will get a free T-shirt with our great logo on it, made by My Liberty Threads. American made, America proud. MyLibertyThreads.com is where you can find that stuff. Okay. The good news, the bad news. The bad news is that Gallup just released a poll about our views on marriage, and it turns out that the younger you are, the less likely you are to see marriage in your near-term future anyway. The older you are, the more traditional we are, so to speak. For the age group 18 to 29, they are not necessarily marrying at any less of a rate, and it's been low for some time now. But the new thing is that the 18 to 29s are not even living together as much anymore. You know, a substitute for marriage is living together, so to speak, if you want to call
it. Even that's reducing itself now.
Right. And part of that probably has to do with a lot of people living at home with mama and papa still. But a lot of it, they think, also has to do with millennials just not getting into any sort of committed relationship. The same holds true for the 29 to 45 age group. They're seeing more single people, not just not married, but now more also single people in that group. But once again, not quite as much as in the younger group. And then the older you go, 45 and up, the traditional marriage seems to be still the mainstay. So that's a little bit of good news in amongst not terribly bad news, but we're going in the wrong direction. That there's no question about that.
Firmer foundations were built farther back.
Yep. But is, as I said, the bad news in terms of our views towards family. But there's better news when it comes to our views toward life, evidently, at least life in the womb. This was in today's Orlando Sentinel. Abortions have declined in nearly all states since 2010, a survey says. And this survey says that in states where there have been new laws making it harder to have abortions, they are down. But also in states where abortion rights laws have not been changed, they are also down. And so what this tells us is that there is an attitudinal change. It's not so much a law, it's not so much a legal legislative thing as it is an attitudinal change. And when you get right down to it, that's the only way you're going to solve these problems. And let's take prohibition, for instance. You can make anything you want illegal. But unless you change people's attitudes about actually doing it, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. It all gets down to the attitude. And then we must ask ourselves, well, who is better at changing the attitude? According to this, it is not the government. Because the same thing has happened in states where the laws have not been changed. Something else is at play here. And I think what that something else is it's the arguments. It's the evidence that we now have about how early in the gestation period life is actually viable outside the womb, much less inside the womb. How early on in the gestation period you can detect a heartbeat. How early on you can discern hands with fingers and feet with toes. It's very early on, and that's what's changing people's minds and hearts and attitudes, which is changing their behavior. It is not the law. The law is the last resort. When you have to go to the government and get a law made, you've already lost. You are admitting you have lost the battle. You have lost the intellectual argument. So now we're going to make it illegal, and we'll put it in the police's. We'll lay it in their laps. Yeah, now it's up to you to go out and do something about it. Yeah, it's your problem now, not ours anymore.
Passing the buck.
Passing the buck is really what it boils down to. And groups who get out, and like John Barros, who we had on the show last week, where he goes every day and he stands out there in front of that Butcher Pendergrass's clinic down there, and he just simply asks girls to come over, women to come over and say, listen, there's another alternative I'd like you to consider. Can we pray? And by God Almighty, he makes a difference. I guarantee you, every legislator up there in Tallahassee walking around with his piece of paper thumping his chest saying, vote for me, look at me, I got your interest. That that ain't worth nothing. Because if that girl wants an abortion, it don't matter if it's legal or not. If that person wants to do heroin, it don't matter if it's legal or not. You got to get to them. You got to get to their heart. And you can't do it by just going to the legislature and outlawing it. You're just, as Lucas said, you're just passing the buck. You just, here, somebody else deal with it. Don't want to deal with this. You see?
It's part of the rebellious human nature, though. We want things that are restricted anyway.
So well,
restrict a freedom, people are going to want to get it any which way they can.
That's a whole other argument.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is abortions have declined in almost all 50 states since 2010. And the biggest decrease in abortion percentage-wise was in Hawaii, where they fell from 3,064 in 2010 to 2,147 in 2014. That's a drop of about 30%.
That's a change of heart right there.
And it didn't have anything to do with any new laws in how are you out there.
Something happened here and something happened here. Yeah.
That's right. And Lucas just pointed to his head and his heart. Okay, don't forget tomorrow night, Colonel Danny McKnight's going to be with us along with Mike McBath, and I hope you'll be with us too. And please tell all your friends and family about us, and please come out and join us. Even Lucas is going to be there in 2 weeks, right, Lucas?
Yes, I will.
He was there the last time. He had the periscope up and running out.
Rain or storm, I will be there.
He will be there, that's right. So we certainly hope you folks will join us 2 weeks from tonight, Cafe Positano. We'd love to meet each and every one of you who will come out. We'd love to have you join our army so I can give away a bunch of T-shirts that night. Okay, that's going to do it for tonight. Once again, thanks for listening. And for Lucas, for Nick, night, everybody.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando, a service of Salem Communications, intelligent, conservative, AM 660.